From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. On Election Day, everything changed.
Electing Trump is really a repudiation of not just Democrats. I mean, it's a repudiation of Republicans as well. You know, that the two-party system has really lost touch with your average voter out there.
Gulf War veteran Ryan Honnell lives in rural Wisconsin. He's a former Army lieutenant who voted for President Obama in both 2008 and 2012. But this time, he campaigned hard for Donald Trump.
There's just so much disillusion on both sides, and that change had to happen. And putting Hillary Clinton in there simply wouldn't have been a change. It would have been the Bush-Clinton years all over again.
Now, I'd heard that sentiment before. Back in January, we did a show looking at Trump supporters to find out what they were looking for in a candidate. At the time, we thought that Trump would never become the nominee, much less the president. Clearly, we were wrong. Even one poll that predicted a Trump victory sort of got it wrong by saying he'd win the popular vote, which he didn't. But that poll, well, it tapped into something others missed, a hidden electorate, conservative whites who sat out the 2012 election. The secret Trump voter.
Women who say they're going to vote for Trump were most uncomfortable telling this to anyone.
That's Ari Kaptein. He designed and ran the poll for the University of Southern California and the LA Times.
So you do see that sort of the unlikely groups, if you like, the implausible groups, the groups where we thought all the women will go for Clinton, those who didn't were a little less likely to tell that to a pollster. So you can also see why that would get missed.
That got missed, but some Trump supporters saw it a mile away. During the election, we sent a team of reporters to battleground states to talk to those voters. We also investigated places that made it harder for people to vote, laws that targeted minority communities. We begin in Philadelphia with Reveal's Laura Starczewski, who talks to a guy who says he knew in his heart all along what was going to happen.
Steve Walls had never been politically active before, but Trump spoke to him.
All right, where's 4635, 4603.
Steve went out door knocking for Trump about 10 times in his Northeast Philly neighborhood, Mayfair. It's pretty mixed politically. In 2012, about 60% of people here voted for Obama, 40% went for Mitt Romney. Steve's an electrician who hunts a lot on his days off. When I went out with him, he was wearing a camouflage Phillies cap, T-shirt, jeans.
Can I speak to Frank? I'm doing door-to-door about the presidential election. Can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
Frank Giuffre is a disabled vet with a long white biker beard.
The presidential election was held today. Would you vote for Donald Trump or Democrat Hillary Clinton? Okay.
Trump. Down the block, Kay LeBlanc answers her door and says right away she's voting for Trump, too.
Don't you feel most of the people voting for Clinton are brain dead? Think about it.
You don't have
all the Catholics that are voting, and she's totally for abortion.
Partial birth abortion. He announced it the other night at the debate.
So when the weather turned cold and rainy, we headed back to Steve's Jeep. Steve wants more jobs, more money here at home, a Trump appointee on the Supreme Court. He's from a military family, and he wants support for veterans. He hates Hillary Clinton and loves that Trump is a political outsider.
I'm a little bit on the same temperament as him. You say something, I'm going to respond. And it may not necessarily be what you want to hear.
He told me the Trump support we saw door knocking was exactly what he'd been hearing everywhere across the city.
When you ask them what they're going to vote for, 90% of these people are going, I'm going to vote for Trump. Like that. Quiet. Because they're scared.
He knew this silent majority would carry Trump. Steve had planned to be a poll watcher on Election Day after Trump called on supporters to go out and watch for voter fraud, specifically in Philadelphia. But then Steve thought he'd have more fun out on the street, talking to people and handing out Trump literature. I met him outside his polling place, a firehouse in his neighborhood, minutes before the polls closed.
It is 7:58. I've been here since 6:45 this morning. It's been a long day. Obviously, you can tell that my voice is shot.
I've talked to probably a couple thousand people, and it's the end of the night. Polls close in 2 minutes.
Steve had been working alongside Hillary supporter Linda Zobel all day. She was thinking Hillary was headed for victory.
But you know what? There'll be a little piece of my heart that will feel sad because of you. You have such passion for Trump. And I'm
I believe you.
I'm very, very
serious. I believe you.
Okay.
I know if Trump wins, you're going to be in a better place. I believe that in my heart. I really do.
I have to accept whatever happens.
Just know that you're going to be better off. I'm telling you. I'm not wrong. I know I'm not wrong. Now the stress begins. The waiting.
Around 9, Steve and I headed to the Tailhook Tavern in Northeast Philly to watch the returns. Hours went by. Finally, around 1 in the morning...
They just called Florida. They just called Florida. This is actually happening.
Steve said this energy reminded him of Obama's victory back in 2008. Only this time, he was on the winning side. The bar was half full of blitzed Trump supporters swaying on their feet when the big news rolled in around 2 a.m.
The New York Times just called Pennsylvania for Trump. That's it. It's game. It's over. That's checkmate. That's not plenty. That's a beating.
The next morning, Steve emailed me this recording.
Well, good morning. Day one, President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Did you ever in your life ever think you'd hear that? President of the United States, Donald Trump. I'm just glad we won. It's our time.
Thanks to Reveal's Laura Starcheski for bringing us that story. So what does Steve mean by it's our time? That's one of the questions we set out to answer earlier this year during primary season. One of our reporters, Nate Halverson, traveled around South Carolina with something he called the Trump game. He loaded a bunch of Donald Trump's most bombastic moments on an iPad. He had Trump supporters play the clips and respond to them. Here's part of that story we first ran in January.
There's someone in South Carolina I want to play the Trump game. A well-connected Republican, Susan Chapman. I drive to Conway, a small southern town near Myrtle Beach. Her home, with a sweeping front porch and columns, is surrounded by willow trees and sits just behind Main Street.
This place is beautiful. Wow.
Susan has deep political ties.
Of course, I worked for Lindsey for years.
Lindsey is South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
So, I mean, it seems like you're really part of the Republican establishment, or at least you were.
I was. And that's a whole nother story we'll go talk about.
We go to her parlor.
I mean, I was a Republican senatorial life member, inner circle, and you name it, all that stuff.
And what happened?
I think what happened is when all these people went to the stage to take down the flag, of course, I was against taking down the flag.
The Confederate flag. It was removed from the South Carolina Capitol.
And that's when I went to Trump.
Susan feels betrayed by the Republican establishment.
And I think most people saw this as a political move to try to bring the South into this. Let's pull down that flag, and in doing this, we can bring the blacks into the party. We can become more diverse. But the thing is, it opened my eyes and a lot of people's eyes.
I pull out the iPad.
Can I show you this? Can we play the Trump game? This is what I've been having.
Glad to.
Washington is broken. And our
country
is in serious trouble and total disarray.
Exactly. I think that tells you right there what Trump supporters believe. It's broken.
Susan and other white voters I spoke with feel their legacy is being pulled down, just like the Confederate flag.
It is not racist to us. Maybe to some it is racist. To me, it's history. When you grew up in the South, the black families were your families. I was basically raised. I can name off the ladies that basically raised me. Ruby Lee, who basically raised me, was a black lady. Her children were my friends. When my father died, she rode with us in the car. When I got married, she sat with the family.
These were people who worked for her family.
They were extension of our family. So we didn't see it as racist. Now, I'm sure that there's some blacks that do. I concur on that.
Susan said something to me I was going to hear over and over again from people playing the Trump game.
If we're a party of the big tent where we want diversity, we want blacks and immigrants and women and gays and everybody else in it, but we don't want conservatives, then we as conservatives need to go somewhere else. We need to go where we're wounded.
Susan left the Republican establishment to become a Trump supporter. But now, Trump has become the establishment. So what does his victory mean for his supporters who never felt connected to the GOP? We sent Catherine Miskowski to Nevada to find out.
When I meet up with Michael Augustine, he's wearing a red T-shirt with Observer written on it in big white letters.
I started to write peaceful on top of it, but I don't think there'll be any problems. It's pretty calm, isn't it?
It's just after 7:30 in the morning, and Michael's outside a community center in Pahrump, Nevada. It's his polling place in this rural town about 60 miles outside of Las Vegas. Michael's got his cup of coffee and his dog, Abby, on a leash. He's about to go inside and vote.
For president?
Yeah.
Well, Donald Trump.
Michael's a 55-year-old white guy who's been through good times and bad. He sold real estate here, but that dried up in the housing bust. These days, he's getting by. He's living in the trailer he grew up in. He farms pot in a backyard grow behind it. Despite the Observer shirt, he's not poll watching in any official capacity today.
It was just so that people knew that I'm here and I'm aware and I'm awake. And, you know, it's certainly not meant to be threatenous, but I felt a responsibility to do something. I didn't say, hey, if you're cheating on your vote, I'm going to shoot you or nothing. You know, it's just... I want people to know I'm observing.
He tells me he's wearing that shirt as a way of showing support for his candidate and for people like himself.
You get stuck away as a middle-aged white guy. You know, we've been put away, and now there's this whole democratic society out there that, for the most part, my experiences with them is they do not want anything to do with me, with a middle-aged white guy. I got that feeling a lot during Clinton rallies that I'd watch and observe.
Donald Trump has a way of making Michael feel good about who he is. I first met Michael about a year ago at a Trump rally where there was no shortage of middle-aged white guys.
It's amazing. You can see the complete separation, you know, especially in the early days at Trump rallies, you know, everybody points it out that, you know, it's mostly white guys.
The event happened at a casino hotel in Las Vegas. This was long before Trump was the GOP nominee, when most political insiders considered him a fringe candidate. But Michael was already intrigued.
This is where I fell in love with him, okay? When he first announced his candidacy, I remember looking and going, is this insane? Donald Trump? What the, you know, and I'm listening to him, and he's kind of an ass. He's pompous, and he's, you know, the crazy hair and all that stuff, but... in simple layman lifestyle, he really uncomplicates it.
That Trump rally feels like a lifetime ago. Since then, more people signed on than any of the so-called experts predicted. But Michael saw signs of that growth in the crowds at more recent Trump rallies.
Towards the end now, you're seeing a lot more white women and more minorities, too. Thank God. You know, they're finally getting it there. It's not, you know, Trump treats everybody the same.
Since we first met, Michael's love for Trump hasn't wavered. Michael's a registered Republican, and Trump's campaign inspired him to get more involved in politics. He's volunteered and even went to the state party convention. On election day, I catch up with Michael after he casts his ballot.
How do you feel?
Elated. Yeah, I feel good.
Great.
Glad it's done, like everybody else.
Michael heads to Las Vegas to spend election night in the most logical possible place.
Staying at Trump International tonight?
That's right, Trump's hotel. Here's what the bar in the lobby sounded like on election night. A couple of days later, I called Michael, who was home in Pahrump.
Now that we know he's elected, you know, how do you feel about the future?
Honestly? Boots to the ground. I think that once Trump's plans get into play and the boots on the ground and America starts working again on American projects in American cities and towns and in our rural areas specifically. I mean, the rural areas have to grow because the cities can't grow anymore. They can't sustain.
What do you say to the people who voted for Clinton and now are worried about the future of the country? Like, what do you want to say to those people?
I want to give them a hug and say, look, keep your eyes open. Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Keep going forward. Yeah.
As excited as Michael is about what's coming in the next 4 years, there are other people in all corners of the country who are feeling the opposite. We're going to hear from them later in the show, and also from a guy who thinks Trump's victory will help pave the way for his dream of an all-white ethnostate. You're listening to Reveal.